Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Hometown Alaska. This is Charles Woolforth. And today, our topic is one that's dear to my heart and I'm sure many others out there. We're just going to have some fun talking about what we want to do this summer. And we live in Alaska, which is obviously the most beautiful place in the world and has more outdoor opportunities than anywhere else you can even imagine. And you can live here your whole life and not even scratch the surface. So what I'm hoping is that you listeners out there who have your own favorite places to go and things to do outdoors during the summer are going to come in and tell us about them. And you don't have to tell us your secrets. You know, you don't have to tell your favorite fishing hole or anything like that. But just to share some inspiration about what we want to do this summer. The sun is outside and the snow is melting. And I think we're on our way into springtime. So I've got several guests today, and one guest who's going to stay with me through the whole hour is somebody who's written a really exciting new book. Melissa Devon is probably known to a lot of you as an outdoor writer, formerly with Anchorage Daily News, and she's got a new book out called The Alaska Adventure Guide, which is published by Menasha Ridge Press, and it basically covers everything you might want to do outdoors in Alaska in pretty impressive detail. I don't know how the heck she pulled this whole thing together. There must be a little bit of cheating because you couldn't have done all of these things. But cruising, backpacking, canoeing, cycling, day hiking, sea kayaking, river running, and winter adventures each has their own chapter, and then a lot of the travel stuff about how to get there and what to do and where to stay and all that sort of stuff. And so Melissa's going to be with me for the whole hour. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And then we're going to have some other guests to inspire you about different regions of Alaska, calling in from Kodiak, from McCarthy, and somebody who spends their summers in the Brooks Range. And for you to get on the air is easy enough. You just call 550-8433, or if you're outside of the Anchorage area, it's 888-353-5752. And that we're on the air during the 2 o'clock hour. So if you're listening to the rebroadcast, obviously don't call in. And the email here is hometownalaska@kska.org. Sometimes that's a great way to get on the air without having to wait on hold because we can't always get you on right away, though we do usually get everyone on. Well, Melissa, this is quite an undertaking. And as I was flipping through it and getting inspired, I was also feeling rather daunted to think that You really have done a lot in this state. I mean, you've been a lot of places and done a lot of outdoor stuff.
I've been lucky to go to a lot of places, but I also have had a lot of luck with friends who have given me some great suggestions. I have a lot of very outdoors-oriented friends, and their suggestions are also included in this book because as fun as it would be to go to all of these places, the reality is you could spend your whole life here and not be able to do it.
Yeah, and spend a fortune, too.
Exactly. And unfortunately, guidebook budgets don't include the money to go to all these places.
Yeah. So, well, tell me about your particular love. I know that you're quite a cyclist. How do you spend your summers when you can do whatever you want to do?
When I'm free, I love to cycle. Obviously, it's my first choice. Sea kayaking is a favorite as well. That's more of my treat to myself. When we get to do family vacations, we usually choose sea kayaking. Day to day, it's cycling and, of course, hiking, because we can do that with our family, hiking, camping, and we can also do it on our own in one afternoon or in the summer. You know how it is. You go out hiking at 9 o'clock at night, and we do a lot of that as well.
If it's sunny, you get out there and go.
Exactly.
So what are some of the more ambitious trips you've done over the years?
Probably one of my favorite that still stands out in my mind is when our children were young, we went to Shuyak Island in Kodiak and spent a week sea kayaking with some friends. And our children, we had a double kayak, and my husband and one child was in the back, and I was in the front with the other in the front, and we didn't do much paddling in the front, so unfortunately my husband took the brunt of that one, but four of us in a kayak, that was a lot of fun.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I understand there's some really gorgeous cabins down there in that Shuyak Island area.
There is,
that you can rent from the state.
Mm-hmm. And we stayed in one of those. And at the time when we did the trip, there was a place where you could rent kayaks from a concessionaire right across at the island. I don't know if that still exists now. As of last spring, it didn't, but I believe that could be in flux. Uh-huh. I have a friend who's planning a trip there right now, and she's in search of a kayak for that trip.
Well, maybe our next guest will have a tip for you.
Exactly. Where can we get a kayak?
Right. So when you are thinking about your reader and what they're going to be doing with your book in terms of going somewhere, are you trying to figure out every little detail, like, okay, where are you going to rent the kayak? How much is it going to cost? Where do you go first, second, third? Or are you kind of giving more of the overview and then the person with a lot of, the person will fill in the details?
When I started this book, the main thing that I wanted to do is think like a person who loves the outdoors. Usually when I plan a trip, the very first thing I think of is, okay, what do I want to do? Is it sea kayaking or hiking? And I start there. So I don't try to tell people this is the best shot. I just try to tell them here are maybe the best five. And then you choose based on the descriptions, which one fits your needs or your family or your level of ability. And I try to make it so that the person can feel confident to do the trips on their own, because we have some great guides in the state, and we do recommend quite a few of them here in the book. But I also try to encourage people, you know, to get out and try it on their own as well.
Uh-huh.
So.
And how did you select? It's obviously a process of elimination. You can't talk about every single trip that somebody could do.
Mm-hmm.
How did you figure out what you were going to include and what you weren't going to include?
It started out more broad, and then as the book grew and grew, as books tend to do, I had to then just start going. I eliminated based on the trips that were my favorite, the ones that I had done. And then I had to go from there to offer an array of trips. So instead of each trip being very similar, like here are three-day trips, I tried to say, okay, here's a weekend trip you could do, here's a week-long trip you could do, or here's a day trip you could do, so that people have a selection.
Mm-hmm.
And the process was gradual, and it's evolved over the years. I first started writing this book in 2005, so 6 years later. It's been updated twice to the current book that it is with this publisher, and it's probably the most succinct. So this is the way I like it now, as opposed to the first version. It's grown and matured, yes.
Took a while to get it all figured out.
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
Yeah, I'm more comfortable with it now.
Uh-huh. So what's the first thing you want to know when you're like going to a new town about what there is to do there? Are you sort of checking out the kayaking or checking out the hiking, or what's your sort of how do you look at a new place?
Well, I'll use Valdez as an example, because we did a sea kayaking trip to Chute Bay several years ago, and it was our first trip out of there, my first trip, not my husband's. And I'd never been to Valdez other than on a bike,
uh-huh.
and I wanted to explore it from a sea kayaker standpoint. So the first thing I wanted to know is who were the best guides or places to get a kayak from, and started my research from there.
And there's a couple of them down there. Yeah.
There are, and they're both, the two that we have listed here in the book are great, and they offered a lot of detailed information on places you could go from there. So the first place is to go to the experts who live in the town, the community, and know it best, because they can give you a wealth of information. And then from there, the little details, like where I slept, didn't really matter. It was like, I have a tent, I can camp wherever, we just need to get to where we're going to go.
So focus on the activity.
It's way more focused on the activities.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way the guidebook's arranged as well. So once you figure out the activity that you want to do, whether it's road cycling or mountain biking or backpacking or sea kayaking, you figure out the region that you want to go to, and if you're going to the interior, then later in the book you can get to the interior section to give you the details on where you might want to stay as you're preparing for your trip, or where you might want to eat when you get back from your trip, and that kind of thing.
Well, let's tell people about that Chute Glacier spot, because it's an amazing spot, and you can go there sea kayaking. You can also hike there. There's some state park cabins that you can rent.
Yep.
Just to give people a taste of what it's like to be there.
That was a great trip. We have our own little skiff, so we were able to get out there on our own in our skiff and rented the kayaks, but the kayaks were brought over by the guide company and dropped off.
And they'll do that for folks, they'll take you out there, even if you don't have your own boat.
Yeah, one of the families in our party did that. They took a boat over and had the kayaks dropped off, and then two of us were in our own boats and went over. And we stayed in the state park cabins, and we just spent 5 days, I believe, over there, and paddled up to the glacier, walked around on the edge, and camped. It was a great family trip and very protected waters. I know things can change wherever there are glaciers, but when we were there, it was beautiful, and it was just an easy trip outside of Valdez. You didn't have to go all the way to Columbia Glacier to get a good trip. You can just go right around the bend to Chute Bay.
Yeah, very spectacular and very gentle at the same time.
Yep. And we were there in May, so there was a little bit of snow left, but it was still a good time of year.
And there's also a good trail that leads out there, though it's a bit far to go both ways. You could go out and get a cabin and then come back, and folks who don't have the money to get all the other equipment could still do that.
Right, right. You can do that. In fact, when we were there, someone hiked in and walked up behind our cabin, and he had hiked in from town.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just out there exploring.
It's a nice trail right along the water.
Yep.
So folks, we're going to get to lots more ideas of what you can do this summer. I'm talking to Melissa Devon, who is the author of the Alaska Adventure Guide. And we want to hear some of your suggestions. What are you planning to do, or what would you like to know about, since we've got these experts who could give you advice on figuring out what you want to do. So to call in, it's 550-8433. That's within the Anchorage Bowl. If you're calling from outside Anchorage, 888-353-5752, and email is hometownalaska. And now I want to invite another guest on the phone from Kodiak, Marion Owen, who is the co-owner of the Galley Gourmet Cruises and B&B in Kodiak, also a super gardener, also a super photographer, very well known in Alaska journalism circles, and also quite an outdoors person, too, and a fixture in Kodiak for many years. Marion, thanks for being with us.
Hi, good afternoon, Charles. How are you?
Great.
Hi, Melissa.
Hi, Marion. How are you doing?
Life is grand.
Yeah. I mean, you live in such a gorgeous and beautiful place, and you must, I know you're working in the summer with your guests, but you must get out as much as possible. And what kind of things do you do outdoors for fun?
You know, for fun, even just for short breaks, year-round, I just do quick hikes because a lot of our parks and accessible hiking areas are just abut the water. So it's cliffs and hikes, and even though the wildflowers aren't out, you've got dripping mosses and so on. And so those are fabulous places to just get out and relax. And I was just looking today, and I'm getting ready to dust off my kayak. I'm getting excited to do that. And, you know, it sounds silly, but, you know, you can swim in the early morning and do something, I mean, in the pool, and you can go out kayaking or hiking in the afternoon, even when the weather is gnarly. So it's really year-round around here.
Yeah, yeah, you're so lucky to live there. So what do you, if a guest who wants to come down to Kodiak and get outdoors, it seems like sea kayaking is really one of the main great things to do there.
It is. Sea kayaking is increasingly popular here because the waters are very protected and there are many places you can go accessible easily through the road system or just put in right here in the harbor. You go around the corner and you're just, you know, getting pooped on by puffins. I mean, life doesn't get better than that. And the wildlife is very accessible. So you might just go around the corner and you've got three sea otters looking at you, or like I said, a wall of puffins, or just recently this past 2 weeks we've had the orca, the killer whales, coming into the channel right in front of all of us feeding on the herring.
Oh, how cool.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, one of our best trips I remember as a family was driving down to Homer, taking the ferry to Kodiak overnight, and then camping out at Fort Abercrombie State Park, where they've got those really interesting World War II ruins, and you can go down to the beach, and there's beautiful tide pooling, and then there's just it seems like unlimited places to go on the water and hiking, and just, you know, it's just and the small town feel of it is just wonderful too. And so I always recommend people go to Kodiak. And Marion, I'd love to have you tell a little bit about Galley Gourmet, what that's all about, because it's such a unique idea, and I'm sure that people will be interested in that too.
It's a fun thing to do. As a matter of fact, this is our 10th anniversary providing gourmet dinner cruises on our yacht. We only take a max of 6 people, and I cook every night, and as much as possible, we gather the greens, the edible flowers, and the herbs right from the raised beds around our house on the property. And then we use, of course, feature seafood, you know, your halibut and salmon, and I even bake the bread. So what we try to do is not only give people attractive, healthy food, but we try and talk to people about locally produced or locally grown food. And, you know, people's eyes just open up when they say, wow, I never knew a salad could taste so good. Because, hey, you know, a lot of us aren't able to grow what we eat. And so it's an education, and it's very fun. And I like surprising people with really strange desserts, like three vegetables and a chocolate cake. Okay, everybody, you don't have to do dishes if you can guess the three vegetables that are in this chocolate dessert.
Oh, I see. Nice. So you make them do dishes because they can never guess.
Oh, and we had one guest say, I'm not going to do dishes. I'm going to tow them behind the boat, and they'll just rinse off.
Right.
But in that 3.5 hours, we get to see all kinds of animals and critters and introduce people to even seafood and how it's processed. We go around the harbor as well.
Neat. Wow. Melissa, what are some of your favorites down in Kodiak? You mentioned the Shuyak Island kayaking, and that's kind of a that's a multi-day trip.
Yes, you fly into that trip. You know, one of the things I love about Kodiak is that every time I've been there, which I believe is 4 times, it's sunny, and everyone says it rains, and I know it doesn't, because every time I've been, it's been sunny. So I love your town, Marion. And one of my favorite things to do in Kodiak that I've done before is mountain biking. There's some great mountain biking trails there, and there's a nice little bike shop. I believe they're still around 58 degrees north, Marion.
Yes, very much so, and they keep updating their mountain biking guide and maps and trails.
Yes, it's a good little bootleg book that they update each year, and I think it's called Riding on the Rock, something like that. It's a great little guidebook, and one trip I was down there, and they took me out and guided me around, and I got to see some really great areas of the town that were not really that far off the beaten track, so there's a lot of good mountain biking in the area.
Very much so, and I love the idea that it's very family-oriented as well here. Many of like the refuge and the museums and so on, put together great programs like Salmon Camp for families and kids, and you just get out just so directly and just get kids out in nature.
Oh, nice.
So the other thing about Kodiak, it seems to me, is that there is a lot less visitors going there. So if you are used to hiking our Chugach State Park trails, which I love and I think are great, but you never really alone. I mean, there's always a lot of other people out there. If you're in Kodiak, getting by yourself is pretty easy. And I've even been told you can drive to some streamside salmon fishing, which is the equivalent of fly-in fishing in other parts of the state.
It's true, Charles. There are places where you just go along the road system and a very short walk. You're just by yourself catching dolly, salmon, and so on, or just standing there. We have a lot of bears that work the rivers and streams, and you just kind of have to stand back and let them do their thing. Even on our golf course, the rule is you have to let the bears play through. So
right.
That's great.
Yep. So you learn to recite poetry like everybody else has to in the outdoors.
How do you get out to see the famous Kodiak bears? I mean, you have to get on a float plane to go somewhere and see them?
There's a variety of ways. Like I said, you can just drive out the road in the morning or in the afternoon, and lots of times you'll see them. But a very popular way is to actually fly out somewhere in the refuge or even over to Katmai, and you're there with the bears for several hours, and it's a very high-quality experience for people. I mean, we've got almost 4,000 bears here. Two-thirds of the island is set aside as a refuge for bears. We've got 3,500 to 4,000 bears. And we tell our guests, I know it costs a little bit of money, but it's an experience you'll never, ever forget. I mean, I do it every year just to be out with people and take pictures. It's such a sweet experience.
It's kind of mind-blowing how close the bears get, yeah.
So, Marion, the rumor that just driving out to the dump to go see the bears is no longer accurate?
No, because it's all fenced in now. There's no accessibility.
Probably not as pretty either.
Not.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be my first choice. And then, of course, about the mid-June to mid-July, the wildflowers are at their peak. And I think it's a wonderful juxtaposition for photographers to get pictures of wildflowers, ocean, snow-capped mountains, people doing things, all in one picture. I love that idea.
Mm-hmm. So what does it cost these days to get to Kodiak from Anchorage? You know, you just go to the airport, get an Alaska Airlines plane, you're there in an hour, but your ticket is roughly what?
Well, I just saw Alaska Airlines has a special for $89.
Oh, that's unusual.
It is unusual. Otherwise, yeah. You know, it's a couple hundred dollars.
Yeah.
And ERA many, many times has specials. to and from Anchorage. And, you know, when I look at the kind of, it's like, Melissa, you're saying, you know, get to the place and then decide the different things you want to do. So we help our guests decide all the different, like a hub, what do you guys like to do? And then we just have this list on our list. Is growing all the time. We have 101 things to do in Kodiak on our website.
Wow.
But I'll tell you what, it's kind of gone down to about 100 and maybe 20 that we're now putting in there. So you won't be without things.
Yeah, plenty to do. All right. Well, I want to really thank you for being with us, Marion. That was Marion Owen. She's a co-owner of Galley Gourmet Cruises and B&B in Kodiak. And Marion's website is on our website at Hometown Alaska. Just go to KSKA.org and scroll down and you'll find it. And you can contact her about her business or other things to do in Kodiak. I'm sure she'd welcome the interest. And so thanks very much for being with us, Marion.
Oh, you bet, Charles and Melissa. And, you know, if anybody has any questions, just email me through the website and I'm happy to answer any questions people might have.
Fantastic. You're a great spokesman for Kodiak. Knew you would be. The other things you can find on the website, the Alaska Public Lands Information Center is a really great source of information for planning any kind of trip. And I've always told, Melissa, you give me your feedback, but I've always told people that that's a really good starting point. If you're not totally sure what you want to do, you can find information there and talk to rangers and sort of get everything figured out. And it's down in the old post office on 4th Avenue.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I remember when I first went down there, I didn't know the difference between Forest Service and State Park and National Park and all these different areas. So they got it all straightened out for me, and I quickly learned the system of, you know, how to get into the cabins fast enough and all of that. So they're a great resource, and I include them several times throughout the book.
Buying your maps and your...
Yes.
Yeah, all that stuff.
Yeah, and there's one in Fairbanks as well. So.
And the one in Tokoe, and also yep. There's a similar one in Ketchikan if you happen to make it down that far. And then... The Alaska Wilderness Recreation and Tourism Association is another link I put on the website because it's a way to reach out to many, many local guides all over the state. And I don't know what your feeling is. Sometimes it seems like a local guide who is just a small mom and pop operation is really the one you want to find rather than the big nationally advertised ones.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a wonderful one right outside of Eagle River Wilderness Birding. And that's run by Bob Dittrich and Lisa Moorhead. Great operation. They do some backcountry trips in Anwar. I mean, they go all over the world, but they also do a lot of great trips in Alaska. And they're birding focused mostly, but a lot of them are river trips as well. And you don't hear about them quite as much because they're not national. They're local Eagle River folks, but I highly recommend them throughout my book.
Yeah. So it seems like sometimes... people who've been doing a really good job and been doing it for a long time, they might not even advertise. It's just word of mouth keeps them busy, and so they just take
And I referrals. Think that's the case with their operation. If you go to their website, a lot of their trips say wait list, and that's probably every guide's dream. You know, that's how you want to operate. So maybe that's why they don't need to advertise.
So how do you, you've been writing about the outdoors in Alaska for quite a while. Do you just find out about these places yourself just through experience and word of mouth?
Just as I've lived here, and I've been here 16 years, I've slowly discovered the places that I've always wanted to go, and Woodtick-Chick is still on my dream list. It's one of the places I still want to go. And I take recommendations from friends, coworkers. I worked with Craig Medrid for years, and of course he has decades of experience. Climbing friends. Charlie Cicera is a friend of ours, and he's got a lot of climbing experience. So we take recommendations from people who have been out there and done it themselves, as well as the places that our family and myself have been. So I just pecking away at that long list of places that I'd love to go.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of people would say it's like the dream job. What could be a better job, right?
It is, although, you know, Craig and I at the Daily News, we used to moan and groan about this, which is probably not fair, but we'd say, you know, when you're out and you're writing about something because you have a deadline and you have to turn a story in, it takes the fun out of it. So I try to make sure that on a lot of the trips that we do as a family that I don't always have an assignment and I'm not always thinking assignment, because when I do that, sometimes I look at the trip a little bit more critically instead of just sitting back and enjoying what it is that brings people here in the first place.
Yeah.
So.
No, I hear you. I wrote travel books for many years and often found that it was kind of like going into a Chinese restaurant and ordering every single thing on the menu.
Exactly.
You felt very surfeited before you're done.
Yeah.
I'm talking today with Melissa Devon, whose new book is The Alaska Adventure Guide. And she's here to answer your questions if you are thinking about doing anything outdoors, or if you have something you'd like to share about a favorite outfitter or place to go. You can call the studio at 550-8433. Outside of Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. And by email, it's hometownalaska@ksKA.org. And here's an email. I've been going out to McCarthy from California for the last few years. This place has something to offer just about everyone, certainly anyone that likes fresh air and has a sense of adventure. Having grown up in this one-horse town, Gaia Mars is a great resource for anything local. Highly recommend to your listeners as one of my top destinations. That's from Dan in San Francisco, or from San Francisco. And Gaia is going to be with us in the second half of the show, so we'll hear from her. So the Daily News essentially stopped doing outdoor coverage, and I guess that was an economic decision on their part.
Yes, it came soon after I left, and yeah, we miss it. They still run some outdoor stories, but yeah, not quite what it used to be.
Yeah, not at all. When you had two reporters who were working on it and really sort of beating the bushes and finding all the best stuff.
Yeah.
So how do you, you stop being on a daily sort of deadline. Mm-hmm. What do you do now other than work on the books?
I'm still doing freelancing about part-time. I'm also the editor of the Alaska Star, which is a small weekly paper out in Chugach Eagle River for my local community, and uh-huh. really have enjoyed that. Going from a daily to a weekly has been a different kind of pressure, but it's also very rewarding to be covering the area that you're so close to and care so much about. So it's been nice over the past year getting to know the people in the community that maybe I wouldn't have met otherwise. So I'm spending a lot of time doing that. I have a dog team, still running them. They're getting a little bit older, but spend time doing that.
And is that just recreational?
Recreational. Mm-hmm. There was a time when I would enter them in races, but they're a little bit old now. Uh-huh. But very happy to get out and run. And also our family is involved in skiing. My son's a competitive skier. My daughter's getting into skiing. So spend a lot of time.
Cross country?
Cross country. Uh-huh. And follow our children around skiing.
Uh-huh.
And then in the summer, our family also runs a commercial fishing set net operation out of Kenai. So we're living down in the Kasilof area for the summer. So
wow.
It takes us out. Yeah.
So you're really
pulled
busy.
In a lot of directions.
So what do you do with the newspaper when you head out to your set net site?
It's about a 6 weeks leave of absence. Mm-hmm. that I take. And I job share with another reporter, and that sort of makes up for it in the summer. And we juggle hours. It's creative,
really?
But it works. Yeah.
So right here in the Anchorage area, here's a topic that would, I think, get people interested. In terms of your favorite day hikes, mm-hmm. You mentioned Flat Top and Bird Ridge is a couple of the top ones.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, Flat Top has gotten awfully crowded, hasn't it? I mean, do you think that takes something away from it for you?
Well, it does. And I mention it as a favorite because for people who come here, it's almost a superlative that you have to do it. You know, my nephew comes up every year and fishes with us as a crew member, and I encourage him every year to come out and do some hikes with me. And last year I said, you've got to come. You've just got to do Flat Top. It's going to be crowded. It's not going to be what you're used to, but you're going to love it. And you do. There's just something about Flat Top that gives you a perspective of Anchorage that makes you realize that you really are in the wilderness, even though you're in the biggest city in the state. So I still keep that on my list just because it's a favorite.
Mm-hmm.
It's not quite the same as doing, Gold Mint, which is one of the other ones that I suggest, or Lost Lake down in Seward.
Gold Mint is up at Hatcher Pass, mm-hmm. and that's much more of a wilderness hike, I would say.
Yeah, yeah, you'll see people on it. There are a lot of mountain bikers like to use it as well, so you mm-hmm. do see bikers on it. But it's a nice little view of Hatcher Pass.
And the Bird Ridge Trail is a amazing amazing views down there. But mm-hmm. that's a lung buster. I mean, you're really working out.
I was going to say that's the cardio. That's the hike to do when you want a good workout. Yeah. Same with Pioneer out in the valley. That's a tough one too. But it's again, it offers those views that Bird Ridge does.
So, yeah. Bird Ridge, I think, is one of the earliest ones to get mm-hmm. get rid of the snow, so people are anxious to get out.
Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned Reed Lakes, which is, I've never done that. Where's
Reed Hatcher Lakes? Pass area.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
And then Winter Creek is a fabulous hike for kids and for visitors who maybe want a flat hike, but it's spectacular.
Definitely. And it offers a different view of the flora and fauna that we have too, especially the trees. They're just so big. You feel so insignificant. And every time I've hiked there, I just marvel at the ferns. You'd think that I'd be used to them by now, but when you hike around those things, you just feel like you're in some prehistoric place that's not Alaska.
Right. And so. it's kind of unreal when you get to the end of it. There's mm-hmm. There's first an amazing gorge, and then there's a hand-operated tram. Mm-hmm. In this day and age, you would think that that sort of thing would not exist anymore, but you get into this thing and pull yourself across, and you're way, way above the ground.
Yeah.
And that's really exciting. Kids love that, or get terrified.
Yeah. It's definitely one of those things that reminds people that you're in Alaska, because we're still just quirky enough and different enough up here that we let things like that happen. You know, there's no rules or regulations against a hand tram where you can, you know, fall hundreds of feet.
Right.
People do it.
Right. And then when you get back, you're right behind the Alyeska hotel there. Yep. And you can, you know, we go and get the kids a yeah. hot chocolate, or you could, if you're, you know, you could go to the bar if you weren't with kids.
Definitely.
And so it's sort of very civilized.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite places to spend summer times, although, you know, we're down in the Kenai most of the time in the summer now, but in past summers, we would often go down and take the bike path, the Bird to Gird Trail or something like that, spend some time in Girdwood. It's one of the neatest day ways to spend a day outside, where you feel like I'm getting a little bit of a vacation from Anchorage, but I can still get home in time for dinner.
Yeah, exactly. One of the great things about Anchorage.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to talk more about outdoor adventures. We're going to be visiting McCarthy in the Brooks Range by telephone, and talking more with Melissa Devon, whose new book is The Alaska Adventure Guide. So stay tuned. When we come back from the break, I'll be giving you the phone numbers if you want to call in. And stay with us. It's Hometown Alaska on KSKA.
If you missed part of today's program, or if you'd like to listen again to Hometown Alaska on KSKA, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. A copy of Hometown Alaska will be available this afternoon on our website at kska.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. My name is Charles Wolforth, and today we are talking about outdoor adventures, things you can do outside of Anchorage, or at least outside of the city, to be in the real Alaska and really enjoy this gorgeous place where we live. And we're interested in your comments, in your questions. The number here is 550-8433. Out of Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. And by email, hometownalaska@kska.org. So make it a conversation and get on the air with us. I'd now like to invite another guest to the air. Gaia Mars is the co-owner of St. Elias Alpine Guides in McCarthy. I think she's in Colorado at the moment, but Gaia actually grew up in McCarthy and knows probably about as much about it as anybody we could talk to. And welcome to the show with us.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. And Melissa Devon is here in the studio, and she's the author of the Alaska Adventure Guide. Your company is one that has always amazed me because of the amount of places you go to that where virtually nobody has been before, that you do these climbs in the Wrangell-St. Elias area that are so remote. And, I mean, if you want to talk about not going out where there's nobody else around, that is where you would go. And So tell me, you know, but I know you do a lot of other stuff too. Tell me sort of about what you do with your company, St. Elias Alpine Guides.
Sure, absolutely. Well, St. Elias Guides, I'm proud to say, has been around longer than actually Wrangell-St. Elias as a national park, since 1978. So what we've done has grown and varied for a long time over the years. And it's always been, you know, a focus on what you're talking about, though, our first ascent trips, getting way off the beaten track. That was really what the founder of the company especially was excited about. So you're right, we do a lot of that.
And that was Bob Jacobs, the famous guide. Yeah.
The infamous Bob Jacobs.
Right.
So from that, I mean, at the very beginning of the company, he used to do two trips a summer. He'd do I think it was 8 or 10 week mountaineering trip, and then you take a week or two break, and then you do an 8 or 10 week backpacking trip, and people can sign up for one or both, and that was all he did. And over the years, it's grown to where now, I mean, we do everything from the 2.5 hour history tours of Kennecott, where the National Park Service concessionaire for that, and half and full day glacier hikes on the Root Glacier that are quite moderate and anyone can do them, all the way up to those multi-week mountaineering expeditions, climbing big peaks like St. Elias and Blackburn, backpacking trips for, you know, 3 days to 2 weeks, same with rafting, multi-day rafting trips, and, you know, everything in between. So we've got quite the gamut of fun activities to get you as far into the park as you have the time and money for.
Yeah, and one of the best things that a family can do in Alaska, I don't see, if Melissa agrees, she's nodding, is to go to McCarthy, see the amazing community there, then do the tour that Gaia's company does through the mill. It's the only way you can actually get inside those buildings and climb around. And then in the afternoon, do the glacier trek that you guys do, where you teach people how to walk on a glacier and be safe. And by the end of the day, you know, people have really had a great outdoor experience, even if they don't know much about the outdoors at all.
Absolutely. That's our most popular combo, is the glacier hike and the Kennecott tour. And then if people have an extra day, we recommend they throw in our raft and flight sea trip, where we raft down the Kennecott and Nizina rivers and get picked up by the wonderful folks at Wrangell Mountain Air and flown back to McCarthy. You get a little flight seeing trip on the way back, and we call that our spectacular 2-day adventure package, which is really, you know, if you can only do 1-day activities, that's the way to do it right there.
Mm-hmm. Now, the park has very few trails, right? So it's mostly kind of route-finding trips. And I'm wondering, for somebody who feels comfortable and has done some backpacking, what is a good, how do they get into doing a trip on their own out there? Or do you have areas where you suggest that somebody look to plan their own trip in the park?
Yeah, definitely. Well, most folks I recommend, and this is what people end up doing, if you want to access the park aside from what you can walk to from McCarthy and Kennecott, which is fabulous, and I recommend that as well, then you're going to want to fly. And so I always point independent travelers who are comfortable going without a guide to Wrangell Mountain Air again, because they have a wealth of information about all the different destinations and whatnot. A lot of times, especially if it's your first time being in an area without trails and signs and whatnot, you'll want to start out with a base camping trip. So instead of trying to get from point A to point B and all the hazards and navigation and everything of that, Wrangell Mountain Air will fly you in to, say, Scolai Pass or Iceberg Lake. Those are probably the two most popular, but there's dozens of destinations throughout the park. And you can just set up a base camp even within sight of the airstrip or a mile or two away and do day hikes. And that's a great sort of first way to get a sense of being in the wilderness without the pressure of, you know, the navigation from point A to B and carrying the 50-pound pack and everything. And we, of course, do those trips guided as well, both the point-to-point and the base camp trips.
Mm-hmm.
And Gaia, there are cabins out there too, aren't there? I just discovered that we were at Kennecott this fall, and I didn't realize there were so many cabins out in the national park.
Yeah, there are a few, not a ton, and my personal opinion is that the locations that the cabins are at are not the most spectacular locations in the park.
Okay, that's
so
good to know.
So they're certainly a good option, but the really, really spectacular places are up high in the alpine, and the cabins are all down lower in the forested areas in the valleys. So they're definitely a great option if you feel like you need that protection of the cabin, and there's definitely some good hiking to be done from some of those spots. but they're not the most popular locations in terms of the scenic beauty and access to the alpine.
Mm-hmm. So are those cabins meant mostly for snow machine travel or dog team travel? Is that why they're low? I'm just curious about them.
You know, honestly, I'm not sure. I mean, they're owned by the Park Service. They're public access. They're first come, first served, so there's no reservation system. And my guess would be, but you'd have to ask the NPS, my guess would be that those were just the places where they felt like they could build something that would be maintainable, that for some reason the access was better, or that it wouldn't, maybe they're in some historic locations too, not wanting to, you know, put a big cabin up in a beautiful alpine meadow, sort of scarring the ultimate wilderness aspect.
Sure.
Those would be some of my guesses, but honestly, I'm not sure.
So I know that part of your catalog is still, after all these years, doing first ascent, so that you'll take clients on a first ascent, a mountain that's never been climbed before, and that's kind of a mind blower to think that there are that many mountains available that have not been climbed. I mean, do you have like an unlimited supply, or are you going to run out at some point? How does that work?
Well, I suppose at some point we'll have to start counting, you know, side ridges and whatnot. honestly, the trickiest thing now is figuring out which ones they are. We know there are tons of them, but they're tightly kept secrets because, you know, everyone in the mountaineering world wants to be the first one to climb Peak 1045 in the Bagley Ice Field that's so aesthetic and beautiful. So we have these inside sources that sometimes will give us info, and, you know, Bob Jacobs certainly being one of them, trying to figure out which ones actually are first ascents is the real challenge, not so much that there aren't very many of them left.
I got you.
Sometimes we encourage people to do second ascents. We certainly can do first ascents if that's important to people, but there's even more peaks that have been climbed once and then checked off, and so no one climbed them again. And if people are willing to go for that second ascent, then the options literally are limitless.
And then for people who are not into the ultra gnarly, you also have some programs where they can learn about backpacking and do something for 2 or 3 days, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Both mountaineering and backpacking, we do a backcountry skills seminar. So in the backcountry department, in the backpacking department, that's a way for, you know, if people are a little nervous about doing their own trip and they want to get skills specifically relating to Alaskan aspects of backpacking, glacier travel, river crossings, and bear safety are the three things we focus on. And they can do our one-day seminar to prepare to go on their own trip. Of course, on all of our trips, you know, we're always teaching people and happy to share skills and all that. And then in terms of the mountaineering, we have a whole series of mountaineering courses that are specifically geared towards teaching skills at various levels that will enable people to go on even bigger and more challenging trips in the future.
Great. Well, I would really want to thank you for being with us, Gaia.
No problem. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. That was Gaia Mars. She's the co-owner of St. Elias Alpine Guides, which is in McCarthy in Wrangell St. Elias National Park. And to learn more about their company, you'll find a link on our website at ksk.org. And you can just scroll down and find that. And so now Matt has been waiting patiently with a question. Matt, do you want to, or a comment? Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll jump in. Yeah, this is Matt Weaver, and I'm actually just coming down from Hatcher Pass this afternoon. It's beautiful up here today. I love this topic. Neat things that folk can do outdoors that are, you know, in-state things, reasonably close to Anchorage. What I wanted to mention is I heard Melissa mention the Gold Mint Trail and the Reed Lakes Trail. Well, if folk just continue up to the top of the road, there is the Independence Mine State Historical Park. And that is a great way to combine an outdoor adventure with a historical adventure. Some of those old buildings have been restored. There is a network of trails that provide sort of a self-guided tour with lots of interpretive panels to show folk, you know, what it was like back in the late 30s and early 40s when that mine was in full swing. And then a couple times a day, there are actually guided tours where park staff take people around. They can open up some of the old buildings and let people explore and see how the miners lived and how the gold was extracted from the ore. And it's just a neat opportunity, really close to Anchorage. And this year, the visitor center is going to open up actually on the 111th anniversary of the forming of the Willow Creek Mining District. That was back in 1898 on June 11th. And so we're going to try, depending on road and snow conditions, to get the visitor center open on June 11th this year.
Yeah, Matt, I agree. That's one of the most beautiful areas. And whenever we have family visit, the first place I take them is Hatcher Pass. And I took my sister up there a couple years ago, and they felt like they were in the middle of nowhere, because to them that is. And the buildings
true.
Have been restored beautifully.
Yeah. I've lived in the Valley since the 70s, and whenever family comes or visitors come, we always bring them to Hatcher Pass. It's really a treasure that's close to the Valley, close to Anchorage, and that Independence Mayan State Historical Park is really a neat feature. So I hope your listeners check it out this summer.
Yeah, that's an excellent tip. And one of the things that, since I'm always focusing on what you can do with kids, since I have four of them, is that you can go up there and look at the mine, and then there's the sort of the tundra expanse around you. And kids just love the idea that you don't have to follow a trail. You know, you can just walk and sort of explore and have this sense of exploration, which is really special there. And then, of course, it's really great in the wintertime, too, if you like cross-country skiing. Although there, you have to kind of modulate your skill level to where you go, because if you stay on the ski trails, you're okay. But if you sort of go back in the hills, there's always avalanche danger, and you have to be aware of what you're doing.
Well, that's true. There's tons of recreation opportunities, you know, in the whole Hatcher Pass area. Winter stuff, you mentioned, you know, skiing and snowshoeing, and then the summer stuff, like the tundra hikes, berry picking, wildlife viewing. Lots to do really close to Anchorage. This is a great topic. Thanks for having it.
Thanks for being on the air with us. I really appreciate it.
Bye.
So long. I now want to invite another guest to the air. Jim Campbell is the co-owner of Arctic Tracks, and Jim's company is one of these smaller companies, like we were talking about, that takes folks out into remarkably remote places. They specialize in the Brooks Range, and they do float trips in Anwar and hiking trips. And so I'll let Jim tell a little bit more about their offerings. Jim, welcome to the air.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on.
So what are your, you know, what's your specialty? What do you sort of want to, what's your most exciting trip that you really look forward to doing during the summertime?
Well, that's a hard one to answer, because every trip pretty much is you know, exciting. It's after 32 years of being in business, it's have never yet tire or you know, become jaded of going up to the Brooks Range. It's every trip is just as fantastic as the last one, kind of thing. It's pretty amazing. But so I get that question a lot, where, you know, what is the best trip to do, or my favorite trip, or all of that. And it's a really hard question to answer, because it's, like I said, it's really hard to choose, and I think it's actually impossible to choose a bad place to go in the Arctic, in the Brooks Range. It's from the Canadian border all the way over to Cape Kusenstern to the west.
Yeah, and it's such a vast area and amazingly beautiful, and so empty of people, you know, that it's just to me, it's a revelation to go up there and, you know, in the northern foothills or even right in the top of the Brooks Range. It's kind of like nothing else you've ever seen. And I know a lot of people focus on Anwar, and I wonder if that's, I know that's a beautiful area, but I wonder if partly that's because of the fame of Anwar and the political issues. And what are some other less known areas where you like to take float trips and introduce people to?
Oh yeah, it's you know, the refuge does have the bigger reputation at the moment anyway, but there was a day when nobody knew of the refuge, and it was harder to sell trips in the refuge for us than it was in the Gates of the Arctic when that first became a park and stuff. But another really out there kind of logistically and just being away from everything and everywhere, is over in the Western Arctic, in the like the Ootacook Uplands, the very upper Colville River, mountainside, you know, north side where it drains out of the from the north side of the Brooks Range, in down through the foothills and all that. It's just it's spectacular country, and like you were just suggesting, there's nobody there, you know, pretty much. It's very unusual to run into anybody. So it's that's become a, you know, we really enjoy going out there, but it's, like I said, it's air logistics anyway. It's a little bit more involved to get there, and it's you just feel like you're out there farther.
Jim, just last week I got an email from a reader who wanted to know about doing a fly-in backpacking trip, but only had 4 days. Does that make sense for you ever to do trips that are that short because of all the logistics that are involved?
No, not really. We get also questions like that. You know, people just don't have the time to do things, and it's a day flying in from Fairbanks. And in a day, I mean, a day minimum, generally, as long as the weather is all cooperating and stuff. And then another day for the return back to Fairbanks, it pretty much eats up a day. And so then to get dropped off, usually, you know, you've got 25 to 50 miles or whatever, depending on what hike you're going to, you know, put together, what route you're going to do. It's pretty difficult to do in 4 days.
Got to take a week at least.
Reality of Alaska.
At least, you know, right. Our trips are all 9 and 10 day sort of durations generally, it's a week would be minimum to plan to do, you know, any basic trip up there. So it's.
What are the biggest challenges that you have to think about to get people out there safely and get them home safely? And I guess maybe it's easier now that you've got satellite phones, but you can't really rely on that. What kind of things do you have to be thinking about just to make sure that everything works out?
Well, it's, you know, pay attention to the details in the very beginning up front so that you've basically anticipated just about everything you could think of happening so that you could be prepared for it with, you know, expedition style first aid kits in the training to back that up, you know, all of the different food and fuel and all that sort of stuff, you know, and then have great gear for, you know, for tents that hold up in severe weather and all that stuff. But it's so the guides are, it's all, any guide, you know, anywhere is always in their mind, you know, even though it looks all, you know, comfortable and relaxed and all that stuff, they're definitely aware of kind of everybody in trying to make sure that nobody does anything, you know, really, I guess, stupid, you know, to where you're really going to hurt yourself without paying attention or something. So that's the biggest, you know, concern or whatever. But it's amazing, you know, how many trips we've done and how many people go up there and stuff that it's, you know, relatively speaking, there's no real serious injuries, you know, maybe sprained ankles or something, but yeah, you've got to just really make sure everybody is kind of aware of how to, you know, how to look out for themselves, I guess.
Right. Now, let me ask you about people who want to try to do something self-guided, and hopefully they have some experience and know what they're doing, but they might not have ever been to the Arctic. I've heard the suggestions like on the Noatak, there's villages you can fly in on a mail plane and then fly to another village and come out. Are there opportunities like that that you recommend or that you think make sense for someone who's trying to do a self-guided trip?
Yeah, there's a lot of different things. Usually it's from village to village is kind of hard just because there's so many or so few villages. Like you said, Noatak Village is one village, but then to walk from there to where? You know, you've got to do a circle back or get picked up by an air taxi or something to bring you back to the village. There's one classic trip was always from like Anituvik Pass. You can commercially fly in there and hike over to a river drainage on the south side and then float out the river drainage to Bettles and then get another commercial flight back, you know, so it's that type of thing. But that was, other than that particular situation, there's just not any other really any villages there to be able to do something like that.
For the most part,
flying in, flying out,
it's not going to be cheap. And just to so people know what we're talking about, 10-day trip, float trip, or outdoor trip in the Arctic, how much per person?
Well, we do like river trips anymore our range, like from the Western Arctic, where there's a lot more air logistics, from 5,100 to 44 in like the 4,400 per person in the Arctic Refuge and in the Gates of the Arctic. And that's, you know, it's all competitive, and it's, we're all in that same ballpark, you know, for most any commercial trips that you're going to do. Backpacking trips are a little bit less, you know, 3,500, 3,800, depending on the area that you're going to be going into or something. But it's, yeah, self-guided trips are great. I highly encourage or you know, would tell anybody to, for sure. It's a heck of an adventure. But we used to actually do that, consult for self-guided trips. But we kind of quit that, you know, years ago, just because of the liability, I guess, after a couple of people specifically had, you know, a route laid out and on the maps, and talked to them a lot in person and all that stuff, and then they get out there and kind of got lost really big time, you know.
Yeah.
And pilots were looking for them for a couple of days. And
you don't want to be responsible for that, yeah.
Right, so finally we said, okay, I guess maybe we shouldn't really be doing that. But it's definitely a place that, you know, you want to have some other experience. That shouldn't be the first trip, backpacking trip you kind of, you know, do on your own.
Without a doubt. And going with a company like yours with all that experience is a great opportunity to learn, and probably a once-in-a-lifetime kind of experience you're always going to remember. And I really want to thank you for being with us, Jim.
Yeah, well, thanks a lot.
All right. So that was Jim Campbell. He's with Arctic Treks. And again, you can find a link to their company on our website at kska.org. And we're running low on time here, and we haven't talked about canoeing, and we haven't talked about a ton of other stuff, Melissa. And so I recommend everybody, if not Melissa's book, which is a great book, there's a lot of other books out there too, to just figure out what you're going to do and get out of town.
There are, and there's so many ways to do it. It's from canoeing to kayaking to biking to, you know, trail running even.
Yeah.
Just go out and do it for a day. It's a great place.
And if you're, you know, if you're just a total beginner, you know, canoeing is a great way to do it, like down on the Swan Lake canoe route outside of Sterling.
Mm-hmm.
That's one where you can just rent a canoe and go out. It's totally gentle, totally easy.
Yep.
And then you sort of move on from one thing to the next.
Another nice one is up Tangle Lakes off of the Denali Highway. I did that the summer before last with the four of us and did four days. It was an incredible trip. But I will, you know, Jim had mentioned the prices for these trips, and I worked out the math when I was doing the guidebook, because sometimes there's a sticker shock with those trips. But the math works out, and it gives you a little bit of sense of peace knowing you're with a guide to do those trips.
Well worth it if you're going to the Brookshire.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's all the time we have. It went by quickly, and definitely a favorite topic. I really thank you for being here,
Melissa
Devon.
Thank you for inviting me.
Her book is The Alaska Adventure Guide. You can learn more about it on our website at kska.org. My name is Charles Walforth. I've been the host. Kristen Spack was in the booth today and did a great job as always. And Pat Yak is the Director of News and Public Affairs here. Please be with us next week for another edition of Hometown Alaska. That's all for today. Thank you very much.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music for Hometown Alaska is Lead Dog, composed and performed by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Views expressed on Hometown Alaska are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available on our website at kska.org, and CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.